This is episode 72 with Bara El Sabah.
So there are so many options out there and they make so many promises. And people end up going for them in hopes that this is the answer that's going to get me those 5 kilos down or 20 kilos down. But if this lifestyle or diet seems like it's not a lifestyle that you can stick to, then I do not recommend that you go for it. So we need something that's a little sustainable, because it's not like you're just going to lose these 20 kilos and then you're going to go back to your previous lifestyle. You need something that you can go on with even afterwards.
Welcome to the Drive to Succeed podcast.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Drive to Succeed podcast. If it's your first time tuning in today, my name is Daniel, the host of the show. This podcast exists to bring you new knowledge, wisdom, and truth in the world of entrepreneurship and self-development. Today's guest is a dietitian, sports nutritionist, personal trainer, and host of one of the top leading health and fitness podcasts in the UAE, Be for Better Health. She is also an Adidas athlete, brand ambassador, and co-author of the book Super Recipes. And in this episode, we cover topics from daily activities you can do to reach your health goals, reason why people fail following fad diets such as keto, paleo, vegan, low carb, Atkins, and so on. How can you achieve balance from eating the foods you love, like pizza, burger, and still maintain living a healthy lifestyle? Is food really the source of all illnesses? If you are a personal trainer, a fitness or health expert who has business offline but you wanted to transition your business online, what are the steps that you can do today to transform your business without feeling overwhelmed? Is there a science behind taking 10,000 steps and many more? Before I send you off, make sure to share this episode to someone who will be inspired to transform their health, expand their consciousness with the relationship to food and their body. Subscribe to the Drive to Succeed podcast in Apple Podcast or Spotify. If it's your first time here or if you haven't yet subscribed, click that subscribe button right now. Let me know what's your biggest takeaway in this episode, and it would also help support the show if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcast. This way it can improve our searchability and more people would know more about this podcast. And now, let's welcome Bara El Sabah.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so Bara, just a quick question. So I know the topic for today is mostly regarding to health. You've been a sports nutritionist, dietitian for how many years now?
So yeah, it's been around, I would say, 8 years so far. I'm also a personal trainer. So it's a dynamic between nutrition and exercise. And it's been around 8 years that I've been working in the field.
Interesting. And I'm just really curious as well, what's the most important lesson you've learned from being a dietitian, sport nutritionist, you know, fitness trainer?
Too many to count. It's a different answer based on what angle we're talking about. But from an angle of a consumer who is trying to get healthy or get in the best shape ever, I would say that consistency in doing and starting a journey is the key to reaching anywhere. So basically starting something for only a week or 2 weeks and then just switching and doing something else or just stopping altogether is going to be the thing that holds you back. But consistency and keep going no matter what obstacles come through is the key to really succeeding in your health journey. And I think that applies in fitness, nutrition, as well as anything else that you do in life.
And do you say there is a massive change for the past 12, 16 months, ever since the COVID happened, in terms of like people's health habits, you know?
Yeah, I think definitely that's a good question, because I think it was really good for some people, because it gave them the time to reflect on their eating habits. And maybe they had more time because they're working from home and they're having more time to cook at home, to get inspiration from people online because they're spending a little bit more time online. And maybe they gained some hours into their day to invest in their health. And then there's also the other side of the spectrum of stress eating or emotional eating during a pandemic and just being at home and always having access to food or snacks. or, you know, these things can definitely come in the way. So I think it's caused changes in both ends of the spectrum. But I hope that people have found a healthier way to cope with these things and maybe found something that they find inspiring to get them on a healthier path through the pandemic and afterwards as well.
Interesting. And also, before we deep dive into this topic today, just give us a little bit background. Like, how do you get started? I know you graduated in the US, Michigan, I guess. You've been in Dubai how long, or UAE at least? And, you know, how do you get started with your journey?
Sure. So basically, I lived in Michigan in the US, but I also lived in Lebanon, which is where I did my undergrad. And I did some of my school studying there as well. So that's when I did nutrition and dietetics. I graduated with that. And then while I was studying nutrition and dietetics, I felt like people can't just be eating healthy to reach the healthiest versions of themselves. People need to be also doing something physical. They need to be active. They need to find a way to move. And in nutrition, you don't get that kind of insight. So what I did is, alongside my nutrition degree, I went into personal training and I got a certification in personal training. And to accompany that even more, because if you're an athlete or someone who goes to gym, you don't eat just like everyone else. So the general population, you would eat more so like an athlete. And that's why I did my sports nutrition degree, to really bring it all in together in order to help people as well as myself in reaching the healthiest version of ourselves and performing at optimal levels in the best way that we can.
Understood. And when you mentioned about better, you know, version of ourselves, I guess for some people that can be, you know, subjective, right? Maybe for them it's like another 10 kg lower or something like that, or, you know, maybe their blood pressure is much more better. What are your thoughts in general?
Yeah, this could mean so many things. So definitely one of the most common ones is for goals and reaching better health. For a lot of people, it's weight loss if they are overweight or obese, or, you know, just want to reach their optimal weight. That is one of the goals. However, there is so much more to optimal health than just your weight, how many kgs you are, how much you lose. There's, you know, learning about how your body can be so functional. So being able to lift your suitcase and being able to carry your groceries and being able to carry your kids, your children, go to work, do things that are functional without having any pain, I think is one of the biggest and most important health outcomes that people can strive towards. And at the same time, being 70 years old, 80 years old, 90, or even 100, and still being able to function at the best way possible, rather than being chair bound or bed bound. So having that functionality, I think, and strength all has to do with incorporating healthy habits. Any age that you can start incorporating it. It could also be, like you mentioned, it could be related to blood pressure, it could be related to cholesterol, it could be heart disease, it could be so many different things. And at the same time, it could be just if you are a healthy individual, you're young, and you just, or even slightly older, and you just want to perform and see what your body can actually do physically, that's also a level of optimal fitness or better health. And it's just, it's like you said, it's very relative and it's very individual to each person and where they are and where they'd like to eventually reach. Health could also be one more thing, which is just being comfortable with your body and coming to acceptance with all of it without having to go on any sort of cycle, whether it's calorie deficits or calorie surpluses or being on diets or, you know, doing anything that's too restrictive. So it could be better health is just dealing with all of these things in a way that you're more comfortable without feeling that restriction and that heaviness that has come with that kind of lifestyle if you've been living it for a long time. So it could be all of those.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And also, I'm just really curious. I know you've been practicing for 8 years. I know most people probably within our inner circle, probably, you know, like a friend, family member, or colleague, that once they started to become a parent, right? I'm not sure if you have kids, but they started to have bigger responsibilities. Their health started to deteriorate. I mean, what are your thoughts on getting back their health? And what's your approach with this? I mean, do you like study what their type of body type where they are, you know, or do you suggest how do they groceries or something like that?
Yeah, great question. So I don't personally have kids just yet, but I have a nephew. And I have a lot of moms in my community, and a lot of my clients and members and a lot of my programs are moms. So I understand where they're coming from. And what happens when you have kids is you get just busy with taking care of them and putting them first. And this is only the very natural thing that happens. But after some time, a lot of moms come back, and maybe after the second or third child, when it just becomes a little bit easier for them to know what's coming and what to expect, what they end up doing is they're ready to take control of their health again, and they're ready to go into it with, like, you know, full force. And I really appreciate that. But for any point that you're in, I think just taking one action or one step towards becoming healthier or making yourself feel better, then that's exactly where we can start. So whether it's increasing your step count, because your step count might be 2,000 or 3,000 steps, and increasing that to 5,000, 6,000, or 10,000 by the end of 4 weeks. So putting some sort of goal timeline and just trying something to make yourself feel better and get back into it gradually is the most important thing. And then eventually, from walking and increasing your steps to becoming more active, and then incorporating resistance training or following a meal plan or making your own breakfast and doing these small things and tips, depending on what your trigger points are or where you feel like you're not being the healthiest, is going to be the best step to take forward. So one step at a time, one action at a time is going to get you much closer to your goal.
Understood. And I think it's also similar to like habit stacking. I guess that's what the process looks like. It's like starting one small step and then gradually, you know, ramping it up until you build that habit and build, you know, that healthy step, whatever that is. I'm just really curious as well, since you already mentioned about the steps, is there a science behind, like, you need to walk 10,000 steps? Because it's mostly promoted by, you know, our mobile phones, right? Is there something behind it?
Great question. So it's actually recommended by some physical institutes that that should be the number that we go for. But is it really scientifically backed? Not really. It's just, it's a benchmark to get people to just try to achieve something. I feel like a lot of people do well when they have a goal, a number, a statistic. You know, it's a little bit more exciting than just, I'm just going to move today and I don't really have direction. I feel like people do well. I'm the type that does well with direction and crushing a certain goal. So it's just, it's for those people to sort of strive towards something. But is it really backed by science? Not necessarily. But is there any harm at all in walking 10,000 steps? Absolutely not, especially if your body is functional, you don't have any injuries or pains. But of course, no matter where you are, you have to gradually work your way up and see how you feel.
And I know, like, when you're trying to get back your health, it's mostly important, like, how you feel after, or, you know, because sometimes your body might look healthy, but maybe your gut, your liver, or, you know, something inside you probably suffering from the foods that you eat. But I'm just really curious as well, is there a specific way for someone? Because when you're just starting out, right? So you started to work out, you started committing with a goal. But after you work out, you know, it feels like, all right, so I can eat a pizza, I can eat a burger, because anyway, I burn those calories anyway. Is there like a specific hack in order for you not to crave those? Or what are your thoughts on better meal planning?
You're absolutely right. So definitely when you have a lot of processed food, your gut doesn't feel good, your skin doesn't feel good, your energy is down. You might even, you know, your mood might be fluctuating and you're just not feeling great, especially if you're consistently eating that way for lunch every day, you're eating something or for dinner. And basically when you start working out, naturally, you feel like you want to put the effort in eating better as well. But regardless if you're working out or not, I think there's always space for the foods that you love. And if that's pizza or ice cream, that's fine. The best approach, I would say, for someone who's just looking into going into a healthy lifestyle and eating better, is not to go to the extreme of things. So I would say go into maybe eating healthy 80% of the time, and 20% of the time, maybe you make space for the foods that you really enjoy. And the reason that I say this is because once you go super restrictive to something that you're so used to, from something that you're so used to something that like isn't very appealing to you or hasn't been appealing to you, you're going to hate it so fast that the next week you're probably going to overeat on the things that you used to eat before. So I think finding the balance and trying to enjoy a healthy lifestyle and finding the foods that you like in a healthy lifestyle and complementing it with a meal here and there that you enjoy and balancing it out. I think also to mention that when I say healthy eating 80% of the time, it also could be a healthy burger. So it could be a grilled chicken burger with two whole grain buns and sweet potato. It could be a really big nutritious salad that has walnuts and pomegranates and avocados and salmon. And so healthy eating doesn't have to be boring, like broccoli and dry chicken, right? It could be so delicious and it can make you feel so good, and your body, your energy, your focus is all going to change because you're doing these small changes. But don't restrict yourself. I, for one, never do that because I know what will be on the other side of the week where I'm being super restrictive. So always keep that in mind.
Interesting. I think after this episode, most of our audience will probably grab something similar to what you mentioned. They're probably feeling hungry right now. But, yeah. But I'm just really curious, when you mentioned about food, do you recommend like reading the label of groceries? Like you mentioned, being too restrictive can affect their eating habits. It's like what they call in the wellness space or in the nutrition space, like yo-yo diet, right? You lose 10 kg now, maybe next month you gain 15 kg more. So what are your thoughts? Do you recommend reading labels and stuff?
Yeah, so I would recommend that you see what your relationship with food is at the moment. To be honest, if you're not in a healthy relationship with food, I don't recommend that you go to extremes of reading labels and all of that. But if you are getting into this and you have a healthy mindset and you know you're not going to be restricting and you're going to try to find that balance and you just want to put the effort in, then of course I recommend that you look at labels just generally, because if you, let's say your goal is weight loss. If your goal is weight loss, then the calories that are on the labels matter, right? Because you want to stick to a certain amount of calories per day. And if this, I don't know, this yogurt is healthy, but it turns out it's like 500 calories overboard because it has sugars and added ingredients, then maybe that's not a good choice. So I think just having awareness and understanding of the foods that you're purchasing is quite important. And other than just looking at the calories, if you're simply trying to reduce your sugar intake or your sodium intake because you have cholesterol or you have hypertension, then yeah, looking at the labels is going to play a big role, because food companies really know how to package things and really healthy when they are actually not necessarily the healthiest thing. They are just like another bag of chips, or they're just like another bag of, you know, candy. So it might be placed as healthy because maybe it says that it's vegan, but is everything vegan really healthy? No, absolutely not, because it could be filled with sugar and it could be super processed. So having that kind of awareness and knowledge, I think, is key to getting into better health.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that as well. I mean, like me and my wife started to have better choices in terms of food. And lately we used to drink this vitamin C that you put in water. It says vitamin C, but when you look in the label, there's a lot of sugar in it and, you know, the flavorings and all that. But I'm just really curious as well. You mentioned about not being too restrictive, being, you know, something that you can enjoy so you can actually sustain it. What are your thoughts with like people following with different kinds of fad diet, like keto, paleo, you know, vegan, low carb, Atkins, or, you know, whatever? I mean,
so there are so many options out there and they make so many promises, and people end up going for them in hopes that this is the answer that's going to get me those 5 kilos down or 20 kilos down. But if this lifestyle or diet seems like it's not a lifestyle that you can stick to, then I do not recommend that you go for it. So we need something that's a little sustainable, because it's not like you're just going to lose these 20 kilos and then you're going to go back to your previous lifestyle. You need something that you can go on with even afterwards, after you reach your goal. So you need to find something that makes you happy. If paleo is the way you want to go and it works for you, then that's great. If keto, which I find very extreme and not necessarily healthy and shouldn't be done on your own without the support of a dietitian, because your blood results could really be affected negatively, then if keto is the way you want to go and you can be monitored by someone, then sure, you can do that. I don't think there's a right and wrong way. I think you should just choose the way that you think would really resonate with you. To be honest with you, I've tried all sorts of diets. I've tried intermittent fasting. I've tried keto. I've tried paleo. And I'm just curious as an individual, but did any of them give me the result I wanted? Of course not, because I could barely stick to any of those for 2 weeks. So if you're curious and you want to try and see if it works for you, sure. But is it going to be the be all and end all for everybody? No, or else we would have had and we would have known that this is the diet that works. And then we don't really need to be looking for anything else, right? But there isn't anything that works magically. It's just basically you have to figure out what is the healthy lifestyle that suits you, with the calorie restriction and the exercise and the quantity and the frequency that you can be doing all of these things, and then staying consistent, as I said in the beginning of the episode.
And I was doing my own research about this as well. I mean, there's a lot of like experts out there, like Mark Hyman and all that. One thing that I always mention is about the older generation, probably our grandparents, have a longer life expectancy or lifespan, right, compared to what it is today. And you mentioned about like food manufacturers, like the way they package it, the way they somehow present it to consumers like us. It's probably, there's a lot of, I don't want to say poison, but there's a lot of harmful bodies inside it. What are your thoughts? Is the food like the source of all diseases? What are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
I think that's a big one. I don't think food is the source of all diseases. I do believe that food impacts us a lot, but there are so many different environmental factors that are also influencing us today, like the chemicals, the pollution, the chemicals found in plastics, the things we're so exposed to, UV rays. All of these things impact us and could cause diseases. Alongside, there's so many hereditary factors that also influence the way that our body responds to things. I think food can play a huge role in preventative care. It can take you to the better, healthier side. It can maybe unmask the genes that could be harmful to you. But it could also, for sure, it could harm you. For sure, it could harm you, because food can lead to heart disease. Food can lead to diabetes. Food can lead to cholesterol, right? And it could lead to obesity, morbidity, and, you know, suffering from everything that comes with that. So that is for sure 100% a thing. But is it the only and sole thing? Of course not. But I think whatever you choose, choosing whole foods, healthy, organic products, produce, the less packaged, the better, the more wholesome, the better. The more you know about the source and where your fish is from, or if you consume fish, or your any of your products are from, the better it is. But at the same time, it's so easy to get so obsessed with these factors. So I think just doing the best that you can whenever you can is what could be asked of us. But going to obsessive levels of doing these things could also be unhealthy for our mental health, right?
Understood. And I'm just a little curious. So you mentioned about mental health already. We're going to deep dive into that as well later. But I'm just really curious, because some people, especially when it comes to science, right, food science, the generation that we are in today are more like advanced, that, you know, you can send maybe like a blood sample to, I don't know, to like a laboratory in the UK or something. They can check out what are the foods that you might be allergic into, or what are the foods that might contribute to your, you know, weight gain or something like that. Would you recommend doing that? Or is there like a certain prerequisite before you deep dive into it? Because I assume there would be some clients that you work with who are like very desperate. Like, you know what, 10 years ago, I looked like this. Now I'm like this. What are your thoughts, option on that as well? I wanted to pause for a quick moment to ask for your help to help us improve the Drive to Succeed podcast. If you could fill up a 1 to 2 minute survey to know what are the topics that are important to you, the type of guests you wanted us to feature in this podcast, because it would really help us curate and elevate and deliver the audio experience you wanted, the things that are relevant to your needs moving forward. The survey can be found on thedrivetosucceed.com/survey. Again, the website is thedrivetosucceed.com/survey. Once again, thank you so much for listening. Let's get back to the rest of the episode.
There are a lot of tests that are coming out, like gene DNA tests, to find out that you can process this food or not. I do not believe in those genetic testing because the research so far hasn't showed that they're very accurate, or maybe the way that the tests are done are not very accurate. I believe in the way the genes work, and I believe there is a huge correlation. However, I don't believe in the efficacy of the testing that's out to date. With regards to allergies, that if you have an allergy to a food, it's not related to your weight gain or weight loss. So I don't think that because you have an allergy to this, and once you stop it, that you're going to lose weight because of it. You have to stop it, because if you have an allergy, then you're going to have an allergic reaction and cause inflammation of the body. So you do have to stop it, but it's not related to weight loss or weight gain. And I know that when you're desperate to get an answer, this is what you would want to go for, any sort of solution, just like fad diets. But I think just taking a second and having faith in yourself and what you can do, and the consistency of it all, is what's going to be the answer. And I know that this is so tough for so many people, but giving yourself a break and then really doing the research on what is going to work is better than spending your money on tests that might not be giving you the answer.
Understood. And I'm just really curious. So you mentioned about mental health. Are there certain foods or like group of foods that, you know, contribute to, you know, a better, you know, thinking or high performance, or, you know, is there a specific thing that you needed to, I know you love, you know, drinking smoothies and all that, but is there a specific like food, like they say that walnuts or even almonds are better for your brain or something like that? You know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I definitely think the more we engage in foods that are so-called superfoods, which are mainly foods that are antioxidants. So they're foods that fight stress in the body, in the brain, which automatically would make you function better, right? So once you reduce the oxidation, once you reduce the stress, once you reduce the inflammation that's going on in the body, you're going to function much better as an individual at a body level and a mind level, right? So going for antioxidant rich foods like walnuts, like almonds, like blueberries, like kale, dark green leafy vegetables, anything with a lot of vibrant colors that are strong, those spinach, these are all going to help the brain, the body function better. And omega-3s are one of the main things that also, we know, affect the brain positively. So omega-3 is found in fatty fish. It's also found in walnuts. It's found in flax seeds. And so incorporating these healthy ingredients in your breakfast, in your lunch, in your dinner, in your smoothies, in your snacks as often as you can is definitely going to help. But at the same time, reducing your intake of processed food, which is initially causing a lot of the inflammation, is going to be as important here. So it's a game that involves doing both.
Speaking of superfoods, you also have a book, right? When was that launch? And can you just tell us where can people get it, and what's the story behind it?
Yeah. So Super Recipes is the book that my sister and I created as a passion project. The reason this book was created is because a lot of people wanted to eat healthy, but felt like eating healthy just meant chicken and broccoli. So what we both did is that we used the recipes that we love. We even have things like burgers in there or pizza. So there's a lot of different ideas of how you can healthify the so common foods that we usually eat and don't necessarily view as healthy. Like people are like, oh, it's a pizza, or oh, it's a burger. How is that healthy? But you can actually make them at home and you can make them healthier. So this is where this passion project was created. It also has some Lebanese authentic recipe.
We've seen.
Yeah. So it's so that you can make the food that you make at home, you can also make it healthier by reducing the oils and choosing healthy ingredients and the method of cooking as well. The book, you can find it online and you can find it on my website, betterasabove.com. You can also purchase it at Kinokuniya in Dubai Mall if you're available. And I believe you can also still find it on Amazon.
Just curious as well, is your sister same, you know, in the same industry as you are in?
Yeah. So we graduated from dietetics together. So she's also a nutritionist. And but she's focused on mothers, families, as well as kids. So things related to breastfeeding, to toddlers, to how kids are and picky eaters, and the pregnancy journey of a mom and how a family could generally be eating better.
Understood. And you mentioned earlier as well, before we started recording, that you are also an Adidas athlete, brand ambassador. How did it get started? Was that originally your plan when you, you know, started this journey?
I am not going to lie. It's always been a dream. I love brands like Adidas. They're amazing global brands that have such a huge mission and such a huge story behind them. And to be affiliated with a brand like that is such a huge honor. Definitely, this was one of the things that I sought out to be from the absolute start, to be working with someone so influential and to be part of that journey with them as well. It's something that's very empowering. It started when I was in Dubai. I've been an ambassador athlete for Adidas for around a year now. Mm-hmm. And it was just through our previous work together. They've approached me for collaborations and a few projects that we did together. And then we just made it a more long-term partnership last year. And it's been great since then. I absolutely love being with them and I love working with them.
Amazing. And also, how long have you been doing or like this workouts? I know you have like a lot of, you have a paid program as well, but you have, you know, like free stuff on Instagram. How long have you been doing it? And what are your thoughts? Because I know some, like, especially I think 12 months ago when, you know, the gym started to close, most trainers, athletes are having a hard time to make, you know, a source of income. Do you think that's one pathway to start, you know, building a brand online, or what are your thoughts on that?
Very interesting. So that's actually when my business really peaked. It's when the pandemic happened. And the reason why is because I had the chance to shift my programs and business to fully function online. And before that, I didn't have the time to sit at home and start building my business and putting programs in place or putting ideas in place, because I used to do one-on-one personal training. So I would be driving all over town. I would be doing meetings all over the place. So I never really had the time to sit down, and there's so much commuting around town. So I really didn't get the chance to do it. So the pandemic really gave me the opportunity to sit down and put out a plan and go after it. And with the pandemic, so many people wanted to work out from home. They don't have equipment. They can't go to the gym. So I basically just started giving out free workouts for around 3 months. And then I still continue to do them now because I know how much people need these workouts for a boost of energy, for a boost of motivation, for ideas to do. And absolutely love sharing that with people. And with that, I do have a more complete program that people can do that's very structured from the comfort of their home, or if they want to do it at the gym, that's fine as well. And so that was the opportunity. And I know that this was a tough time for a lot of personal trainers. They prefer to do one-on-one in person, but I think this was also a way to visit the online world. And I definitely really enjoyed that time in exploring that part of my business.
And also there's one fitness trainer, like coach as well. I don't know if you know him. He's based in the UK. It's similar to what you've done. Actually, it's pretty much brilliant. His name is Joe Wicks. I think since the pandemic, he was doing like every day. And now he has like, I don't know how many books he launched for the past 12 or 16 months. And also, I'm just really curious. So would you recommend starting on Instagram or starting a podcast when a personal trainer wanted to build their business online? Because I know there's a lot of advice that out there that can be overwhelming.
Wow, that's a really good question. I started out with Instagram, but obviously we all start from somewhere. I had zero followers, then I had 4,000 for the longest time. And then eventually, like, I don't know, it took me 4 years to reach 10,000. And then from there, it escalated and it went much quicker. In the pandemic, I went from like 25K to 80K just because people wanted a lot of this content. But the reason I started a podcast myself is because I wanted a platform where I can speak about things in a longer, more elaborative space, whereas Instagram makes it very short and quick, which is awesome. But in nutrition and fitness, you feel like you want to say a little bit more and give people more insight. So that's why I started podcasting. With fitness, I think, and nutrition, it's good to be visual and it's good to be present on Instagram. And I think when you're ready, go for podcasting. I think podcasting is growing in the Middle East, but it's not as big as it is in the West. So taking the time and investing your time initially on Instagram and then going for podcasting is good. If you're not too overwhelmed and you do have time, I would do both at the same time and be very consistent with both, because that is exactly what's going to give you results.
And I'm just really curious, now that, you know, we're almost towards the end of the show, where can people find you? You know, can you tell us more about your program and, you know, your Instagram handle, your podcast and everything?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. That's where I mostly hang out. So it's Bera Elsabagh. That's my user handle. And my website is beraelsabagh.com. You can find a lot of my recorded workout programs and you can train with me for like a full hour. And I have full music on and a lot of energy and so much motivation. You can do it at home. I do have workouts on the app that you can do that are self-guided and you do it at your own time. So there won't be a lot of sort of like recorded interaction with me, but you just follow the moves. So there is that easier option. I also do a personalized program, but that's only launched at certain parts of the year because I do it as a one-on-one digital program and it takes a lot of time. And I really like to dedicate full attention to each member that signs up. So if you're interested in a personalized nutrition and exercise program that's for 8 or 12 weeks, you can also just stay tuned on my website or my Instagram and sign up for the wait list. And then as soon as it's ready, you'll definitely find out through my newsletter, Instagram, website. That's where I usually announce it. And that's where you will find a lot of my information. And you can also find me on the podcast, Be For Better Health. I have a lot of good content there. You can get a head start and start knowing where to start in your health journey or how to push it forward if you're more advanced. I have a lot of content on there and I'm sure that the listeners would really enjoy it. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to me on Instagram or via email on beraelsabagh@gmail.com.
Well, thank you so much, Bera, for your time. Before my last and final question, I just want to acknowledge you for sharing your journey, your tips, your wisdom. I am sure there's a lot of people out there who's excited to implement some of the things that you mentioned and more deep dive when they go down on your website, on your podcast, and probably some of them would also sign up for your program. And I've seen the program and I've seen the trailer as well. It's really interesting, especially for women. I can see the results because I've seen you like three years back when you were in Dubai as well. So I was just like, wow, you know, the transformation, the abs and everything, the food, you know, you walk the talk. And that's why you're here today as well. And for someone like you, it's like more in a bigger passion than just, you know, making money and just sharing like free content. It's really amazing as well. So my last and final question to you is, if everything is stripped away from you, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 years from now, 5 years from now, you know, you have your own docuseries or another book coming out, your business becomes so successful and you got to start all over again, right? What would be your main drive to succeed?
Oh, wow. What would be my main drive to succeed? It would be to help inspire others in reaching a healthier, better, stronger version of themselves through the work that I do and through the education that I'm able to share with them that they can connect with.
Well, thank you so much, Bera, for your time. Until next episode, see you in the next one.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, we're now booking new guests for our show. So if it's your first time here or you are a returning subscriber, the Drive to Succeed podcast focuses on value-based conversations, stories that inspires and impact business growth and human potential. So if you know someone in your network or within your circle of influence that might fit the description, please go to the website at thedrivetosucceed.com/guest. Again, the website is thedrivetosucceed.com/guest. We are also running an online newsletter, so if you wanted to know more about the cool stuff we do, you can also check out the website at thedrivetosucceed.com/newsletter. Once again, thank you for listening. Bye for now.